You're listening to National Rock Review.
For the National Rock Review, I'm here with Paul Ridley of St. Ridley. First question I have for you, you started playing guitar when you were 13. Were you taking lessons? How'd you get into it?
My brother had a bass guitar, and I kept stealing it from him. He got really aggravated with me, and I just begged and begged my mom to get me a guitar, and she finally bought me a Fender Stratocaster, like one of the cheap ones. And then a couple buddies of mine were playing, and they were showing me stuff, and I just didn't feel like I was learning quick enough, because like I passed all my friends rather quickly. So I ended up just getting on the internet, learning a lot of stuff, buying a lot of books, you know, and just shredding through Pantera solos and stuff like that. And I wouldn't stop playing until my fingers bled, and just kept at it and at it and at it until, you know, I finally gained some knowledge. I took very few lessons. I really...
Mostly self-taught?
Yeah, I'm pretty much mostly self-taught.
So what was the first song you actually decided you had to learn how to play? From beginning to end, you could do it no problems.
I'm sure it was a Pantera song. I'm going to say I think it was Mouth for War. Vulgar Display of Power.
All right, so from what I've read, your first live performance was by the age of 19 out in Detroit?
Yep.
Were you the front man then, or who were you?
No, I was mainly lead guitarist for every band I was in up until this band. This is actually the first band I've ever sang in. I never even tried to sing until 3 years ago, you know? Actually, probably 4 years ago now, but...
Well, all right, so then one of my other questions is, I've noticed that on all the live recordings I've seen, you stretch your neck up very similar to like Lemmy. What made you go that route?
When I played guitar and sang at the same time in this band, like, I always had to deal with microphone stands and, like, not bumping my guitar with them.
Okay.
So lots of times I would have the mic up and point down so I wouldn't bump the mic stand. And I found out when I stretched my neck back at a certain angle, I can get a really gritty, almost Kurt Cobain sound. And I'm very heavily influenced by 90s stuff, so, like, I just loved it. And I started out doing it like that, but, like, eventually I kind of learned how to do it straight on. And it just, like, it taught me how to feel something in the back of my throat that I needed to utilize to get the sound I wanted. So that's how I started doing it. And it's just easier to do it with my neck stretch than it is forward.
So it's kind of well documented that you went through some weight loss surgery at... Obviously, you died twice, so that's in and of itself interesting, but I'm trying to imagine you were 250 pounds. What's it like to lose a wide receiver and then go and start performing? It had to change your style a little bit.
It made me sick. It really taught me something about life. Like, people treat you different immediately. Shows were easier to get. People I've known my whole life were nicer to me.
Why do you think that is? Because of almost time or because of the weight?
No, it's all looks.
Yeah.
And like I went from being 425 pounds to being 181 at my lightest. And just the way everyone treated me differently, like people I've known my whole lives, made me sick. And like I was getting a lot better shows all the time based on... people just being more accepting of a skinnier person, to be honest with you.
Okay. So tell me a little bit about your time when you were in the studio. I was kind of curious. What's it like before you said you wanted to get out of from behind? Yeah. What's it like for you as a musician, having been behind the mixer, moving in, and now you're out in front of it?
Well, I've always been a performer, but the thing about that really is that, you know, now when I go in to do work and record new stuff, I don't have to put up with someone's bullshit. I know their job now. Like, I know exactly what to tell them. I know exactly the terms. There's 100 ways to skin a cat, and I found the best way that works for me. So it just makes my job a lot easier. And there's, you know, 3 people in this band that are studio owners and engineers and producers, and we all know what we're doing. And it makes work a lot easier. Like, a lot of us don't even have to be there all the time. We can send it over, you know what I mean? We can everyone's used to working with Clicks days in, day out. We can go in and knock out a new song in like 4 hours, you know what I mean? Just everyone's real professional, straight to the point, and we wouldn't settle for anything less. So
fantastic. So what is the actual writing process for you guys when you're putting together a new song?
Well, actually, the writing process has kind of changed for us. It used to be just me. I'd write these songs, and I'd bring them to our guitarist, Matt Dalton, who owns 37 Studios, and he would produce it for me, help me change it around a little bit, make it a little more catchy and more widely accepted, because I got really dark in my writing, and I didn't really pay attention too much about, like, having a hook that, you know, I never really cared about radio. You know, I never really cared about being popular. At this point, when I started doing St. Ridley, I was writing these songs because I was losing my mind. My health was shot. I went through a divorce. My dad just died. Like, I had nothing, like, except my music, and that's what made me pull through. But ever since I went through all that shit and, like, got the band together and have actual permanent members now, the writing has changed a lot. Like, Matt doesn't really write so much with us anymore. He helps us after the songs are all, you know, pieced together. And most of the time, it's me writing with Dave. And then, you know, Rich comes in, our drummer, puts his taste on it. And, like, everyone in the band plays multiple instruments, so we all pick it apart and get it exactly how we want it. And, like, I try to maintain an idea so my idea gets across, and everyone helps each other out in doing that. So it's, like, a very well-oiled machine as of lately.
So, changing gears a little bit, your St. Patrick's Day show? I gotta ask, only because I'm out of morbid curiosity, why did somebody want to stab
you? I don't know. The guy was weird. Like, the guy was a head charge
fan. Well, of course he's gotta be weird. He went from a show to homicide. But...
Right. The guy came up to me, and he was like, head charge was great. And, like, I'm like, yeah, they were good. You know, they kill it every night. And he's like, starts talking to me about all this head charge stuff. And I'm like, dude, you know I'm not in head charge, right? He's like... Yeah, I know that. You're in St. Ridley. I came out to see you guys and Head Charge. I'm like, cool. And then he starts talking to me about Head Charge some more. And I'm just like, uh-huh. You know, being nice. And he's like, but I really like your music. You know, I've listened to Fool or King. And, you know, and he asked me some questions about the lyrics and stuff and told me, like, how much of an impact it had on him. And, like, the guy really knew his stuff. And he was just struck me as weird, like, emotionless and cold. You know what I mean? And then he was like, do you mind if I take a picture with you? I'm like, yeah, sure, no problem, you know? And he put the camera up, and I did my, like, little smile that I always do, you know, the evil-looking Joker smile. And he took the picture, and he looked at me, and he's like, you know, maybe you wouldn't smile like that so much if you had a knife between your fucking ribs. And I looked at him, and I was like, well, I couldn't write music if I had a knife in my ribs, bro. You need to settle down. That's not even funny. I'm going to go. And I walked away, you know. It was so weird.
So it's a little early in the career for crazy fans, but, right. You know.
No, this guy was whacked out. That guy had to have been on, like, serious, serious drugs. Like I could tell about him. The guy was not right, you know.
So the other thing you said in your video diary, which I found interesting, was you performed in a kilt on St. Patrick's Day. As a Scotsman and some Irish boy, I got to ask, did you represent properly, or...
You know what? We had a problem in a previous tour when I did that. I forgot it was an all-ages show. And I put my leg on the monitor and hung nuts in front of, like, 500 people. Like, straight up. So the promoter flipped the hell out on me and was, like, trying to talk himself out of making me leave. You know what I mean? So this year, I'm sad to say... I wore something underneath, but at least I wore something ridiculous underneath, so if someone's seen it, they would at least get a laugh, you know what I mean? I wore some hot pink underwear, you know what I mean? Those just looked absolutely ridiculous, so even if they've seen a flash, they'd be like, I think I just saw that guy's nuts. But, you know, like, my family's Irish as hell, and I had to represent, and I did what I did, but...
Now, did you have the family tarpon, or was it just a kilt that you had made?
The family tartan we have is very similar to the one I wore on stage that night, but the one that is my family tartan is very hard to track down and is very expensive to get, you know, made into a kilt because it's, like, it's ridiculous, like hundreds of dollars a square yard, you know what I mean? So I looked at the Irish Guard one, which is very close. It's only one stripe off of mine. Like, the difference between the Irish Guard one and my family's tartan is there's a broken yellow line that goes through it. But it was close.
Hey, so. You got as close as you could, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It's not as easy. So your musical influence is obviously, you can hear the 90s all over it. One of the things that I noticed as I was listening was some of your songs really could have been right on the Crow soundtrack, like Knock Stone Temple Pilots right off. It really kind of stuck with me. Outside of your musical references, do you have any kind of literature influences that, you know, writers, obviously we know you're into comic books, but
yeah.
What else, who else influences you outside of, like, fiction or nonfiction? Anybody?
Yeah, you know, recently I just started getting into, like, I found out a singer that I really like, Brian Fallon from the Gaslight Anthem. The dude writes amazing lyrics, like, really paints a picture with it. And I was talking to a friend of mine about it, and they said that, they could obviously tell that he was influenced by, like, these certain poets, you know what I mean? So I started reading, like, all the old greats, you know, the old, like, poets and stuff like that, you know, like, and writers and, like, old school stuff like that. But I really don't have that much time to read, and I'm really trying to go through this stuff and, like, really soak it in and just kind of use my, you know, vocabulary more powerfully. Like, I want to, like, the thing that's most important to me is using my words to make people feel. You know what I mean? And right now I'm actually searching for literature like that. That's going to make me feel. So I know how I can use my words. You know what I mean? I never did good in English in school. I never, you know, I was in, like, thrash metal bands. So, like, all the lyrics I wrote for those thrash metal bands were just violence and stupid. You know what I mean? You know, nothing against thrash metal and Slayer-esque violence, but it's just not my thing anymore. I've grown up, and I want to make a difference with things. So I'm really just getting into old poetry and stuff like that now, and I really wish I would have done that in high school. But
other than that, now you've got the right influence, I guess, right?
Yeah.
The right reason to do it. But let me hit on four of your songs. Black Sheep. How autobiographical is that? And the reason I'm asking is because one of the interviews I read, you were saying you got the name St. Ridley kind of because of how well you treat your friends and your inner circle. So I'm trying to figure out how you jive the nickname to how autobiographical that song is.
That song is very autobiographical. You know, man, like, there was a time, like, when I was going through all those surgeries and losing the weight and, like, going through my divorce and all that, where I got to the point where I just felt like I was a drag on everybody. You know what I mean? So what I ended up doing was I wrote that song just because, like, that's where I was at the time. I don't feel that way now, you know what I mean? But at the time, I felt like I was a bad influence to my sister's kids, you know what I mean? Because, like, I was drinking all the time and doing stupid stuff, you know, and being, you know, like, reckless. And they were seeing that, and I didn't want them to see that, you know? So that was, you know, real close to home. My brother, you know, saying, big brother with the badge never fails. He keeps me out of jail. I can't tell you how many nights I had been, like, drunk and, like, upset and, like, mad at the world and causing trouble. And my brothers just swooped in to pick me up, like, right before I did something so stupid I would have wound up in jail. You know what I mean? And, you know, I was going through a rough time. And, like, my mom, like, I was raised by, like, a wonderful family. Like, my dad was always there for me and my mom was always there for me. And, like, everything I did, I kind of seemed to feel like I was, like, disappointing them. You know what I mean? So, like, I wrote that song just to kind of get it all off my chest. You know what I mean? And I have a wonderful, wonderful relationship with all my family. We're all super close. And to be honest with you, I actually have a hard time playing that song anymore. So that's why you'll never hear it in the set. I don't ever want to play it live.
Fair enough. Then, for me, I was wondering if Who I Am is kind of the evolution from that song to who you are now, or what does that song really kind of take for you now?
That song was me walking out of the darkness. It was me refining myself. It was me, you know, being backstabbed and just being pissed and just being like, I am done with being what everyone else wants me to be. I'm going to be my own man. I'm going to stop getting drug around by everyone. Fuck everybody. I am who I am. If they don't like it, they can get fucked. And, like, I've been backstabbed so many damn times by, like, people close to me. And, like, that song was just me just, like, being like, I've had enough. I am who I am. I'm going to do what I want to do. So that's what that came out. It's like the most positive song I've written to this day. So
the video for it on YouTube is really fantastic. You know, the mixing on it sounds really good. The visuals look really good from the show. So any plans to kind of maybe do another video similar to that or put on a little more polished video for the band up there?
We'd really like to, but we are mega broke. We have no label support, and we're trying to keep up with this tour. We don't even have a booking agent. Like, I'm amazed we have gotten as far as we have without any of this stuff. Like, we have a manager and a publicist, and that's really it. And we'd love to do a music video. You know, like, if there's someone out there that is in, like, film school or something that would love to, like, kind of make a video with us, we'd love to do it. But, like, as for paying, like, a crew, we just don't have the money to do that. So we'd love to, and the second we can make it happen, we're going to do so, but I don't see that happening anytime soon.
Tell me a little bit more about the song Burn and what it means.
The song is just the feelings you go through when you're backstabbed by someone that you thought cared about you. You're kind of left on, it's like being thrown to the wolves and left to fucking rot by someone you thought loved you. That's pretty much what that's about. It's about being backstabbed by a close friend in the worst way possible. And I'm not going to get any more descriptive than that.
Obviously, you go deep, and you're pulling in stuff from your life. Is that something you want to talk about, or do you want to let that one go? I don't want to take you too far into exposing all your emotions there either.
Back to life, I never feel sane or safe from myself. My insecurities eat me alive. It was all about, you know, just learning not to be afraid to put myself out there. And it's really about the struggle of not caring about what people think. It's about playing a song on stage without worrying if they're going to clap or not. Because, like, I really had to get over a lot of stuff to be able to do that. And, like, when it says, you know, Gaslight Anthem said something in the song, "Too Much Blood on the Page." And it's really, that song, their song is about, you know, putting too much of their real life into their lyrics. And that song was also about that type of struggle, because it says, "You can see me smile when the pain comes in." That's really, you know, like how I act on stage. Like when I get to a part that really hits me, you can see it in my face. You know what I mean? It's just a way of saying, like, I'm showing you what I feel by doing this. And it says, "Watch the blood run down to bring me back to life." It's pretty much I'm getting rid of those wounds by bleeding on the page to make me a happier person. So it's really actually kind of positive. It's just,
for the most part, you have said that your music tries to take the negative and make it into a positive. I kind of agree with that.
Thank you.
In fact, I actually read all the interviews before I even listened to your album. Mm-hmm. So I kind of got a different spin on some of it. So I thought it was pretty good, and I think you're pretty open and honest. One thing you brought up is that you're not a fan of social media, with bands getting the likes and all that. Unfortunately, it's one of those necessary tools to kind of get the word out sometimes. Do you have any kind of game plan to make social media work for you the way you want to get the message out?
Yes, hire somebody. I am an idiot with social media, and I probably shouldn't diss social media, because nowadays, if you don't do social media, you're not going to get seen. So, and one thing I'm learning in this career I've built for myself is I really need to start watching what I say sometimes, because
drop this whole question.
You're good, but no, we're gonna get a better handle on that. And I made the mistake of not caring than what I should have, and everyone's telling me I should care, so I'm gonna take steps to correct that.
Well, you got Instagram, which I went looking for Twitter.
We do?
Yeah, dude, there's plenty of pictures of you on Twitter. You actually had your own personal Twitter.
I do.
Instagram for a while, yeah. You got one test photo. It was a riot. And one last question before, if you don't mind. I'm kind of fascinated with the tie-in to actually being related to St. Nicholas Ridley.
Mm-hmm.
Burned as a heretic for the Anglican Church. Is notoriously known in England. Mm-hmm. With that kind of history and the irony of you taking on St. Ridley, any chance that maybe there's going to be a song in the future about the family connection?
There already is.
Which one?
It's not out yet. We played it tonight, though. So just be on the look for that, really.
Okay. What's the name of that one?
Death by Design.
Death by Design?
Yeah. I'll give you a copy of the tour exclusive CD. It's got it on there. And it's kind of a mixture between that, and it also kind of plays on, like, I don't know, I got kind of ADD when I was writing that song. There's parts in there that's about that, and then there's parts about, like, the Joker and Harley Quinn's relationship. But it's written so vaguely that if you know how much I like comic books and you know how much, how proud I am of my heritage, you'll kind of figure it out. You know what I mean? So, like, there's a part where it says, you pull the wings off a fly, you watch it suffer and die. So where do we stand? I mean, you and I. You hold on, I said goodbye. You know what I mean? That's about his whole situation with the problem with the crown and his beliefs, so.
Well, do you know the irony that Ray Bradbury actually references him in Fahrenheit 451?
Does?
Yes. He references when he and the other priests were burned at the stake.
Mm-hmm.
The line is something, let them build this fire, it's going to burn forever, meaning that our martyrdom will create the Church of England.
Yep.
So it was kind of a very interesting reference in a book about, you know, censorship.
Yeah.
That he got referenced, so.
That's awesome.
Did I
might use that.
I did way too much research on this.
That's cool.